all feelings are a choice. And even as that comes out of my mouth, I'm like, oh my gosh, the world is so at odds with that information. But I sincerely believe that we're responsible for our lives. We're responsible for our feelings. And that if someone does something to you that's mean, and that means that you respond in anger, then that means that you're not at choice. And of course you're at choice. And so I think that for parents and kids, I think a big part is just learning to take responsibility.
Welcome to another episode of the Deeper Than Dope podcast. I am super excited to have the one and only Chris Krohn on the show. Chris,
what's
welcome.
Up, Bennett? How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm super excited about this.
Dude, let's go.
Met you, and I'll start with the story of, man, I forgot who invited me. But it was that damn arrow thing. I'm there, and there's a bunch of teenagers, and they're like, come check out what Chris is doing. And you get an actual training arrow, right? A wooden training arrow with a metal blunted tip.
Yeah.
And then you write a limiting belief.
Yep.
And then you want to replace that limiting belief on the other side. It's like, okay, this is all cool. Where's this going? And then somebody puts on safety glasses. Another person puts on gloves. You put the, not even on the bone, on this like
weak tip of the arrow goes right on that soft spot of the throat, right there where the larynx is.
Soft spot. You put it right there. You put the metal tip right on your throat. The other person puts their gloves like this against the arrow, and you have to step into an arrow. And it breaks it on your throat. I legitimately was having like a mini panic attack. I'm like, I'm not doing this. I'm not. And they're like, all these 14-year-olds are doing it. And they're like, you're doing it, Bennett. You can't leave till you do it. I'm like, F you guys.
Yeah, dude. What a great introduction to me. That's a little bit how I do life.
Yeah.
When I'm outside of my comfort zone, I'm usually happiest. And I think part of that is just because I've learned that when we're comfortable, we're aging. When we're comfortable and we're not pushing ourselves, it's okay to have moments where you're smelling the roses, but whatever isn't growing is dying. And all I see is carcasses of people dying left and right everywhere because no one's challenging themselves. They're not pushing themselves.
I like that. Where did that mentality come when you made that click of, you know, I want to build a life of comfort, and then you get the life of comfort. And you're like, wait, this is maybe not what I was after because I need to continue to challenge myself.
For me, it actually happened before I built anything. I was 19 years old. I had graduated high school. My family was taking a vacation to the ocean in Cannon Beach, Oregon, right outside of Portland. And my sister and I, on a really bad weather day, were wave jumping, and we were pushing our limits, and we were going out really far. And there was a riptide that started pulling her out, and we got in too deep. And I got myself to safety. She did not and could not. And I was going to watch my sister drown, or I was going to try to save her. And I don't know. I had this moment of courage, and I was like, I'm not going to watch my sister die. So I jumped in after her, and I very quickly got to her, but I found it almost impossible to swim her back with me. I'm 6'4". She's 6'2". She's tall. And she was already so tired that she was hardly even keeping herself above the water. And that was one of those near death moments for me. I thought, this is it. Help isn't coming. And my life flashed before my eyes. I saw a lot of things that I wasn't proud of. I wanted to live so badly. And my sister and I, we screamed prayers. And that prayer got answered. It was a God moment. And a single large non-rolling wave carried us all the way back to where we could stand up. And our life was saved that day. And I remember when I walked out of that ocean, I knew that I hadn't saved my sister. My mom was literally crying. She's like, you saved your sister. I said, I didn't save anybody. I was saved. And went on a journey trying to figure out the meaning behind that, trying to figure out why. And it definitely led to a mentality of whatever it takes. It led to a mentality that every day is your last on earth. And so you have to live like you're dying. And I live that way every day. Every day needs to be better than the day before. Every day, you know, I call it my definition of nobility. Nobility is reserved for people that choose to be better today than the day before. And I've been living that way ever since.
I love that. Thanks for sharing that story. And that was when you were 19, you said.
Yeah.
So kind of what were the next steps between that 19-year-old, I guess, you know, big pivotal moment to who Chris Krohn is today?
Well, a short while later, I found myself on a 2-year Christian mission in Germany, and I was doing that for my church. And Germany is probably one of the most godless places on the planet. I'm talking about Eastern Germany, 10 years after the Berlin Wall came down. And you have this old generation that are so pessimistic and cynical. And I'm spending 2 years of my life every day talking to people on the streets, knocking on doors and saying if they want to hear a message about God. And every single day was just filled with, hey, if there was a loving God, he would have never let this war happen. And I spent 2 years cutting my teeth on that. And I found several people that wanted to talk about God. And I had these incredible, miraculous, even fulfilling experiences, but they were far and few in between and it was really hard. And I don't know, I thrived in that environment. I just, if every day was a gift to be alive, then the opportunity to do something hard that I believed in was worthwhile. And so by the time I got off that 2-year Christian mission, I went to college. In college, I founded my first business, became financially independent by the time I graduated college. And that kind of set a tone and a pace for the rest of my life where I found it actually very easy to do very hard, challenging things because I had developed this mindset that just came from the idea that, hey, bro, you're not even supposed to be alive. Like, you're on borrowed time. Well, you better do something, you know?
That's awesome. So it's the borrowed time and then also, I guess, getting your butt kicked for 2 years.
Yes. And that was great because it was just literally like 2 years of straight rejection. After that, it meant that it was kind of cool. When I was in college, I wanted to be a doctor and very quickly found out that that wasn't going to pan out for me because I took organic chemistry for the second time. It's a weeder class for those that want to be a doctor. And I got a C-, a worse grade than on the retake. And I remember how bad it felt to give up on that because I just couldn't figure out chemistry. That's actually was a blessing for me because it actually gave me the opportunity to say, hey, there's no degree in this career training. People call it higher learning. I'll call it career training. I couldn't find any career training that I thought would be satisfying when you're making, well, this job will pay you $40,000 a year and this will pay you $70,000 a year and this will pay you $60,000 a year. I'm like, geez, if you're not going to be a doctor, does that mean that more or less all the career options here are 50 to 120K options? And the answer was, yeah. And that's when I started looking outside. And so I basically said, I'm going to go to the School of Hard Knocks and become an entrepreneur. At the same time, I'm finishing my degree so my mother-in-law don't kill me. And that was a period of time in my life where I buckled down. I worked really, really hard, found some mentors, and ended up learning how to produce some great results. And, you know, for me, I found it through real estate investing. I bought my first house as a college kid with a basement that I rented out to cover my mortgage. So I'm like, geez, I just got rid of my number one expense. Yep. So then I was like, we should do that again. Bought a second house, use the equity from the first one. Cause I didn't have money. I didn't have money. I didn't have much going for me. That house got rented out, made me $600 a month on a lease option. And I was like, this is good. And you know, 4 years later, I had 25 of these little homes and they gave me that $1 million net worth and they were paying about $12,000 a month residually. And so rejection, you know, during those 2 years was actually a really important part of my education where it's just like, hey, whatever it takes, energy says you don't give it. Most people try things 2 or 3 or 4 times and then they give up because we learn that as toddlers. We learn that as children that you're going to try a few times. And if you can't get it, you're a failure. As an adult, you can't do that. You can't afford that. It's like, shoot, some of the most worthwhile things you're going to fail 10 times or 100 times or maybe 1,000 times. And that might be what it takes to do something that almost nobody can do.
Yeah. I had a similar experience on, which I'm not part of that faith anymore, but I served a 2-year mission. And looking back on it, I attribute most of the success to knocking doors. And you didn't mention you're in Germany. I went to Mexico. Yeah. You're also stuck with somebody, at least in my case, that doesn't speak English. And I don't speak Spanish.
Yes.
Figuring out everything. You can't call home.
Yeah.
You get an email every week for less than an hour. Anyways, that grit of just grinding it out and keep going is huge.
Yep.
And then bring us to where you're at right now. I mean, what I saw with what you're doing with teenagers was just absolutely amazing. And what gave you the idea to focus on, I mean, I know you focus on all age groups, but particularly you know, younger generation, mental health and empowering beliefs?
You know, it's a lot of it just started from a lot of my for-profits. I own a number of companies. You know, I've gone on to do a couple billion dollars now in real estate, and it's a machine that just, it does its own thing. And what's great about that is I always had this dream of being a successful entrepreneur so that I wouldn't have to be an entrepreneur. Like, it was this idea of like, I'm going to figure this business game out. I'm going to hire someone to do it for me. There's going to be some leftover money. And then I'm going to, this machine that just perpetually spins off money then will give me the freedom to do what I want. And, so my wife and I, a few years ago, we started our private foundation. It's called the Chrome Breakthrough Foundation, and it is based on mental wellness. We help people all over the world experience a technology that I developed called Breakthrough. And Breakthrough is where, you know, someone's basically tackling a blind spot that is creating a lot of sadness and anger for them. And, you know, no one escapes childhood without picking up thousands of limiting beliefs. I can't do this. Yeah. I'm not good enough for that. This will never happen. I'm not fast enough. I can't do this. And we've got these ideas that now form our adult perception that hold us back from our winnings in life. And so I developed this, it was a for-profit for a number of years where people would come and get coaching and mastermind. And I would teach them, I'd certify them in Breakthrough. I'd give them breakthroughs and people would have these incredible experiences. And then after 5 years, it felt wrong to have a for-profit that was making millions of dollars a year doing that. And we closed shop on the for-profit, chose some other business focuses, and instead reopened it as the foundation and just said, this work is kind of spiritual. Like, helping someone overcome their limiting beliefs is big. And so our foundation does a number of things. We, you know, last year we went to Ukraine 3 times on service missions. We went to Mexico 2 times. I'm going to Guatemala in a few weeks, a couple of times, one for a service mission, one for a sex traffic ring bust. And what we're doing is, you know, one of the arms of our foundation is really just to go out into the world and just say, who are the people that are in the most desperate need? Let's help them. And then the other side, that's the save lives component. And then we have a change lives component, which is let's offer as many breakthroughs as we can, you know, through my certified coaches to people in need. And so we do breakthroughs for free for people everywhere. And that shows up as an event that you attended for teenagers saying, hey, we are in a mental health crisis. These kids have such low emotional intelligence quotient because you don't really learn emotional intelligence anywhere. And most human beings, the way they show up in life, Bennett, is that when good things happen, they feel good. And when bad things happen, they feel bad. That's a really shitty way to do life because you're out of control and you're a victim. And it means when good things happen, you're happy. And then when bad things don't, you're sad. I'm like, that's no way to live. You have to learn the fortitude that says when good things happen, they don't make me happy. I would choose to be happy, but by choice, having nothing to do with the good that's happening in my world, because when bad quote unquote things happen, I want to have a good day too. And I don't want to allow those circumstances to fry me. So we teach that to kids. And, you know, we're just getting ready to embark. We're going up to Canada. There in Alberta, there's a school district where every week there's a suicide because of this mental health crisis. And so we're going in and basically doing a string of seminars, you know, assemblies for the kids, basically teaching them, giving them a crash course in an emotional intelligence, because it's just what the world needs desperately right now.
I've been reading a lot about the mental health crisis and trying to get more and more into it. And I have my opinions, but I'd love to know, what do you believe is causing, you know, the low emotional intelligence? And then speaking to myself and other listeners as parents, what do you do and how do you train your kids to mitigate those risks from the mental health crisis?
Yeah, so I think the problem is that we're so prosperous and we're so distracted and we're so busy and life has gotten really easy. There's an app for that. Oh, you don't have food? Don't worry. DoorDash it. Someone will bring it to you. We're kings and queens. Like, literally, we are these entitled brats where everything is always available. And you know what? I may not refer to abundance as in like people are rich and live in mansions and have nice houses, but people have enough money that they can eat out multiple times every day of the week for the most part. They can, and they can make themselves fat on just the ease of life. And, you know, think about social media. It's like endless entertainment. Swipe, 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 swipe. You wake up, 3 hours have passed. It's like, what did you do to grow? What did you do to build? And so for our teenagers in particular, the mental health crisis is actually linked to them having social media where they post things and they're hoping that their peers will appreciate and like them. But kids are kind of cruel. They can be nice, but they can be really cruel. They can be really aggressive, and they control each other hard. They can, they, so you take a fragile, young teenage woman that is trying to form her identity, and she posts a sweet picture of herself, and someone says, "You have a big nose." Men take 100 mental pictures of themselves every day. Women take 103,000 mental pictures a day. They have mirrors that allow them to look at every single pore on their body, and they're obsessed with their image. So you give a young woman social media, and she's going to define the way she feels about herself based on how other people think about her. And social media just makes it too easy to bag on these little kids. And so there's all these studies that have been done that talk about that. So number one, we are in easy times, which is producing weak people. And on top of that, with all the ease that we have right now, it's just easy to say, I'm procrastinating, I'll do it tomorrow. People aren't rising up to do meaningful stuff. They're not challenging themselves, because we live in a world where you don't have to. I call this our first generation Benedict couch surfers. Literally, if I wanted to, I could quit my job. And if I needed to, I could literally move from couch to couch to couch and do that for a very long time before a bunch of people get pissed off for me doing nothing. And it's like, yeah, I still have a roof over my head and there's food and I don't have a job. We live in that kind of world, and it's only moving more in that direction. And so, why a mental health crisis? Because we've lost our grit. We've lost our work ethic. We've lost our purpose. We've lost our reason to push. And that doesn't mean all people, but I'm, of course, talking about the masses.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. More on the social media aspect and focusing on that, I really like the input on how easy life is. Yeah. And I kind of started that conversation off with you. I mean, you build the wealth, you do everything to build a comfortable lifestyle, but yet you have always known, I need to challenge myself. And when I was creating my mission statement for Dirty Dough, it was, well, let's just be happy, right? But happiness isn't enough, or joy isn't enough. And that's where I tacked on the fulfillment piece.
Yeah.
And you have to have the progression and that challenge to have the fulfillment.
Yeah. So fulfillment is not something you can buy. It's only earned, usually by making really hard, selfless choices. And so there's a story from Ivan Illich. This is from Tolstoy. And the story of Ivan Illich is about this young man in Russia who had all this musical talent. He composed music. He was brilliant at it. And the woman he married had different plans for him. She wanted him to be a chief magistrate, someone of great importance. And so he ended up people-pleasing. He pursued her path versus his own. And he ended up having a very, very prolific, successful career, had all of the accolades, but as life went on, became more and more unhappy. And the book ends kind of sad. It's a cautionary tale. He's on his deathbed. His wife is still alive. She's with him. And he turns to her and he says, "What if all of it was for nothing?" And then he died and took to his grave all his music, all of his passion, the things that could have brought joy and happiness and meaning for so many people. And I think that every single person on this planet has to ask, what will fulfill me? And at the end of the day, it's living your purpose. And if you can't figure out what that is, then you might get distracted by pleasure, by making yourself happy, or by addiction, or just by getting through life.
Yeah, I love that. What is the advice? I mean, just there's so much going on with mental health, and it's overwhelming. But as a parent, at least I can do the best I can for my kids. And what is the advice that you have for the parents?
You know, my last year, my daughter was in the mental hospital twice for suicide watch. And when my wife and I took her out the second time, we thought, we know we can't keep her alive. Even having her sleep in her bed, if she wants to go, she's going to go. And that struggle, I think, had a lot to do with a lot of things, but I think part of it was the media. And so it kind of gave birth last Christmas to an idea. It's been a year now, and I got with some really smart people in tech, and I said, I want to build the first social media platform for kids. One that doesn't allow them to have an account. They can't post, but they can enjoy social media. But it's also designed not just to entertain, but to educate. And the algorithm is not based on what a child wants. It's actually built on what parents want. And it's designed to be a place where kids can experience social media as well as the internet. We're creating a curated version of the internet so that it doesn't backlink to porn and the dark web and all the garbage that's out there, because the mental health crisis will drive you to those places. So we're creating a version that says, give your kids the internet, give your kids social media, because we have found a way. It's not released yet, but we have found a way, and it'll be out this next year, but we've found a way. We believe that our hope is that this technology will help parents give their family and their children a segue into the real world without putting all of the garbage that's available on them as well. And so, I mean, I would have literally created that just for my own kids, but the more I got parent feedback involved, we decided this is something that the world maybe needs. So we're building that, and that's something that we're doing now.
What's that called?
It's going to be called Fib.
Fib, right.
Yeah, the kids named it. You've heard of Gab watches. Huh. Gab is really about keeping your children safe from predators, and it's supposed to be safe, but Gab isn't cool. And so Gab caters to the parents, not the kids. Kids are embarrassed when they have Gab. So our goal is to create a version of social media and the internet that the kids lead with, and they're like, this is so cool, so that there's adoption and that they want to use it. And in some research studies we did, they came up with the name Fib, which means to lie. And then the catchphrase is don't fib, fib. but it's really about making it kid centric and teenager centric and letting them, you know, be a part of that creationary process.
I love that. Going back to what you shared about with your daughter, how is that for you and your spouse to go through that? And I guess anytime anything goes wrong, it's easy to blame ourselves, right? Yeah. And be like, oh, what did I do? Yeah. But obviously you only have so much control. So mentally, personally, both you and your wife, how did you get through that and separate, separate that negativity from attaching that to yourself?
Yeah. You know, there's a difference between being responsible for your children until they're a certain age and then taking responsibility for their choices. At every age, your children are responsible for their choices. I remember my second oldest is autistic, and we were in the kitchen. He was probably, I think, 7 years old, and he was so angry, he slammed the door, and it was on a spring hinge. It came off the spring, slammed the wall, and there was this metal piece of art that was wedged up in the ceiling that knocked free, conked him on the head, took him to the ER and got stitches. And it was kind of an ironic moment once we got through the panic of it all, where I was just like, that kid did that to himself, right? I'm responsible that the artwork I thought was secured was up there. He's responsible, even though he didn't get it, for being angry, slamming the door. And one of the things I love to teach parents and teach kids is that almost every day at my breakfast table, I ask my children, who's responsible for your feelings? Who's in charge of your feelings? And just earlier today, I was sitting down doing some pro bono mentorship with a young entrepreneur that said he had gotten burned. I said, how'd you get burned? He's like, oh, there's a half a dozen people that we invested in and then they didn't invest in us. You know, we got burned. I said, brother, you didn't get burned. You burned yourself. Like no one made you pissed. No one made you angry. No one did you wrong. You were in charge of the way that you chose to interpret that experience. No one can hurt you even. This is literally I can physically hurt you, but I can't mentally hurt you. I can't emotionally hurt you. That's a choice. All feelings are a choice. And even as that comes out of my mouth, I'm like, oh my gosh, the world is so at odds with that information. But I sincerely believe that we're responsible for our lives. We're responsible for our feelings. And that if someone does something to you that's mean, and that means that you respond in anger, then that means that you're not at choice. And of course you're at choice. And so I think that for parents and kids, I think a big part is just learning to take responsibility. So for me and my wife, that was one of the hardest things we ever had to go through. And we had to remind ourselves, this child is not yet 18 and we are responsible for her, but she's also responsible for her choices. And I think probably honestly, Ben, at the hardest moment of 2023 was taking her out of the hospital and realizing if my daughter chooses to kill herself, I have to be okay with it. Because it's not my choice to make, it's hers. And even though I will do everything in my power to stop that choice and did, it's still her life. And that's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
I have to take accountability for my part and she has to take accountability for hers.
I appreciate you sharing that. My wife and I both went through something kind of similar, both with our parents. Her family, and I think it's her grandma, like went emotionless, went mute for a few years from severe depression, and then died. Grandpa committed suicide. Anyways, we grew up very religious, and we chose a different path. And she didn't want to tell her mom that, because she's like, my mom will get sick and die.
Yeah.
Like, I will kill my mom with this news. And I went through something. So financially, I provided some support for my mom. And if it's not there in the timely manner that she needs it, it's, oh, you're lucky I'm still here. I've done so much. And both of it's kind of like, anyways, we had to sit down, and this was about a year ago, and same thing, like, whether it's her mom or my mom, if we make a decision that's best for our families and it results in something tragic happened to them, dying or death by suicide, like, kind of have to let that go. And which was extremely hard. I could imagine it's 1,000 times more hard with a child. But once we both made that decision, she had the conversation with mom. It wasn't nearly as bad as it wasn't bad at all. But it was very freeing for us to realize, hey, we actually don't have control over this other person's emotions. Wow. I really appreciate you sharing that. Super, super tough. How old is your daughter, by the way?
She's 17 right now. And this last year, she's actually doing very, very well.
Awesome.
And it's great. It's a great relief. And my wife and I are just honestly just praying and wishing the best for her. She just got her third degree black belt in Taekwondo.
She's across the streets.
Yeah. She's an accomplished young woman.
That's awesome. This just got brought up last week. Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink.
Yeah.
That was one of the most pivotal books for me, really in management style, but just like everything comes down to me, everything. And I love how you phrase this. Well, I can punch you in the face, but emotionally, you don't have to accept that felt bad, right? Like it's all perspective, it's all frame of reference. And that Extreme Ownership book was the first thing that I just read all these military solutions or situations that Jocko Willink was in. I'm like, okay, well, that one for sure isn't your fault. And then I didn't communicate clearly. I did tell them, but I didn't iterate the importance by writing it out 5 times.
Yeah.
Or I did write it down 5 times and they still didn't do it. That was an indication that I didn't set the correct expectations or I hired the wrong person.
Always bringing it right back to him.
And he remains in control 1,000% of the time, which, man, what an amazing way to live if I'm controllable over everything because everything comes back to me. And I started adopting that. And it is actually very freeing to mess up where you think your employee messes up or your spouse or your child. And then you come back to him and say, I apologize. I didn't communicate clearly enough.
Yeah.
And you bring it back on yourself. And then, man, it lifts up any defense that maybe they had against you as well. And then now you can have an open and clear conversation.
So right before I came in this room, I was just finishing teaching my children business because my children are all privately educated. 4 years ago, we took them out of the school system. We hired our own teachers and brought them in, and we take them on trips and we fly places, and we're really customizing their individual education. And so on Tuesday mornings, I go in and I basically teach business for 30 minutes. And today I was introducing the concept of blue chip companies, what makes them successful, and how you identify a company in early stage that might go on to be really successful. And so we were talking about how, well, are they funded? Do they have the right management team? Do they have the right people on the bus? And then today was talking about their milestones. It's like, what does it mean? What are milestones? And what does it mean when they do and don't hit them? And at the end of the day, I said, when they don't hit them, I said, who do you blame? I said, look at this CEO, look at the 5 chiefs we've talked about today, but the CEO, that's the one person that you blame. And they said, well, Dad, how do you get a good CEO? I said, well, you should go to Glassdoor, right? This is where they review C-suite level people transparently from anonymously all of the employees that they've ever had working for them. And at the end of the day, I said, but the buck stops with this person. And so if you don't have the right CEO, because having a great idea is one thing, but execution is everything. And a team that can execute is way more important than having a good idea. Good ideas are dime a dozen. Can you actually bring it to market? And when I was done, I said, and I want you to remember, who's the CEO of your life? And they looked at me kind of weird. And I said, well, it's you. And I said, do you remember who the CEO reports to? The board, the ownership team. And by the way, guess who owns you? And they, Dad, you? I said, nope, you own you. Which means that if you're unhappy, it's your fault. And if you're happy, it's your fault. And you're basically responsible for everything in your life. So this idea of teaching extreme ownership, I don't think is just for businesses. I think it's for kids. I think it's for adults. I think it's actually probably for every human being on this planet.
Yeah. Again, that was started relating to business, but relating it to marriage, fatherhood, any of that, friendships, anytime you can say, oh, that was my bad.
Yeah.
Just watching the demeanor of that other person change, like, oh, why are you taking responsibility for that? You're like, because it is my bad. Maybe it's their bad as well, but it for sure is me. And if you want to accept some, that's cool, but it doesn't matter to me. I'm gonna bring it all back to me.
Yeah.
And it just opened up so much and just deeper relationships,
mm-hmm.
I think. So,
yeah.
First thing, my last question for you, because you're doing so many different things, and I'm sure you've had some time to think about this. What's the purpose of all? Like, what is the legacy that you want to leave behind, that you want to be remembered by?
My goal in life is I'd love to give $1 billion of my own profits and winnings from business to my foundation, to create a perpetual endowment fund that can continue doing the work of breakthrough long after I die. When I think of all the skills that I've had a chance to learn or master in life, if I could time machine back, Malcolm Gladwell says it's 10,000 hours to master something. And, I've got 37 things checked off my list, and I'd like to meet 100 before I die. And when I ask myself, geez, Chris, if you had to go all the way back to the beginning of a young adult and could only keep one skill, what would it be? And it would be this breakthrough technology, the ability to question our own thoughts and beliefs, because our beliefs are so erroneous. The majority of our beliefs, all they do is they limit us. The beliefs that I'm good enough. I'm like, are you? I'm not good enough. Are you? I'm not smart enough for that. Is it true? I'm bad at math. Is that true? Learning how to question the beliefs that don't serve us and leveling them up. We can't create permission to step into anything new until we overcome the limit that we have all set in our life. And we set all of our limits. And so this legacy of pushing past our past set limits and becoming more limitless, that's really ultimately the legacy that we'd like to see furthered all over the world, whether we're here on the planet or not, is to give the gift of breakthroughs to as many people as are looking for change, transformation, or that level up.
I love that you focused on that. I mean, there's so many different things to focus on and do good in the world. You know, you can give people blankets and give them food and give them all of this. And I was in Africa a few months ago doing that, drilling water wells, and I heard a bunch of people talk about, you know, how blessed we are in America, right in front of people in Africa. I'm like, well, if we're blessed, I mean, they're not blessed. And then again, I looked up a stat and it's like, okay, well, what's the suicide rate in United States versus Kenya?
Yeah.
Well, you're 3 times more likely to die by suicide in the United States. So are we really focused on the right things by like, hey, we need to give everybody food, blankets, and a little bit more money and a PlayStation or something? It's like, no, I think you really do need to go into the mindset. Financially, material, like as long as you're not dying by starvation, like maybe we have that covered. And that's why I love that that's your focus. Mm. Because you can have all the material things. And I hear this all the time as well. You know, I want a lot of wealth so I can give money to people. It's like, but why do you want to give money to them? Oh, so they can live a better life. But why do you want them to live a better life? Mm. And it's, well, no, I want them. I mean, for years, it's clear. I want them to experience breakthroughs and break through their limiting beliefs. And it has nothing to do with all of the material stuff. It's straight mental, which I absolutely love. Awesome. So Chris, I appreciate your time. Where can guests connect with you if they're not already connected with you? Hopefully they already are.
If you're new to me, my name is spelled a little weird. It's Chris with a K. It's Crone with a K. And if you look up Chris Crone on any social media platform, you're going to find me. And I spend a lot of time teaching people about real estate, building wealth, private equity, but there's a lot of just development. How do you personally develop yourself into the person you want to become? Those are the things I love to share the most online. You can find my Breakthrough Foundation there and everything else.
Hey, Chris, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for sharing everything.
You're welcome.